Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello everybody and welcome to the latest edition of the Royal Blue Podcast. We're going live today on YouTube and a Good Friday special, and I'm your host Chris Beasley, glad to be joined by my Echo colleague and Everton correspondent Joe Thomas, who's back after a well-earned rest, although he was roughly back at Finch Farm in at the deep end yesterday, and our regular guest Gavin Buckland. Just before I come back to Joe, Gav, we had a terrific second episode of Goodison Park, My Home, this week. Yeah. Derek Mountfield in this room, he was on fine form. Just as somebody who remembers Derek yourself and those glory years, I mean, what was he like? He lived the dream, didn't he, from going from the Gladys Street Terrace to part of Everton's greatest ever side?
Somebody's been compared physically to Derek Mountfield before, it has to be said. Derek, I mean, it's the type of signer that doesn't happen now. Derek went from Tranmere over to Everton and was playing in the first team within 12 months. You just don't get that now, do you? Or very rarely. Yeah, Derek was a fine player. I mean, most famously, I think, his goal-scoring ratio for a defender was unbelievable.
It was unbelievable for Everton centre forward.
Absolutely. He looked pretty fit on the video. I think he maybe should play. Yeah, he was very. I thought it was an excellent. He complimented Kevin Ratcliffe very well. I think he was a bit more physical than Kevin. Was all about pace.
Yeah,
and I think it was made for a good partnership. But he was a schoolboy centre forward, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
And he took that into his senior playing days. And a lot of his goals weren't like classic centre-halves. He did score the odd one with, you know, quite a few, you know, headers from crosses and dead balls. But some of his finishes were great. You know, they were like sort of centre-forward finishes. And, he certainly lived the dream. And it's always good to have that in tight-winning teams. I think local-born players who support, yeah. And he got a couple of injuries. I think it was cartilage. I think he had problems with, he had a couple of operations, and it's sadly, and it touches on this, it's sadly tailed off a little bit, and I think, you know, Howard was forced really to buy Dave Watson. Once Dave Watson came and got settled, then Derek, who still had injury problems, was you know, obviously going to be struggling to get a game, but then he had a good career at Aston Villa. And he's definitely, you know, I think anybody played that team, if you played that team all season, then you're an Everton legend for me. Yeah. And Derek, also, because he's a local born player and a supporter, you know, he adds a little bit extra on top. And he's a great fella as well, isn't he? He's a lovely guy, Derek, as well. No ways and graces about him. And, you know, he's one of my favourites.
Terrific. Before we move on to the game and the previewing and all of that, I mean, unfortunately, the noise, as the manager calls it, is always Sergio with Everton. I mean, while you were away, obviously, I've been doing that stuff with the FAB. They wrote letters to Farhad Moshiri, to Josh Wander and to Richard Masters this week, and then they were published the details of those. I must say that 777 did get back to them and kind of said, we'll get back to them and say, we can't actually say anything at this period in time. And then there's a piece from yourself today talking about just how 777 are continuing with their commitment in terms of the club and the finances, even though we're still waiting for all this to be approved. And that was part of the FAB's concerns, of just this limbo that Everton are in at the moment.
Yeah, I think it's an understandable concern, and I think it's probably worth commending the fan advisory board for some of their work, particularly over the last few weeks. I think they've judged the tone of things quite right, and you know, it's a difficult place to be an Everton fan right now.
Yeah.
I think they're being as proactive as they can to try and raise the concerns with the right concerns with the right people. Because it does feel like every week you wake up on a Monday morning and you brace yourself for what might come next. And
yeah,
that is going to continue for more weeks to come, unfortunately, because we know that obviously we know the account's going to come out before the end of the month, which is getting very, very close. And we also know that we know that the verdict will come in the second PSR case after the case concluded earlier this week.
Yeah.
And that's before you even get into the footballing matters, because obviously it's a very, very big Easter weekend. And then obviously going into that game against Burnley is going to be huge as well. But yeah, no, they raised legitimate concerns, and I think there's a general degree of frustration from across the fan base over this process. There's understandable concern about 777. There's also understandable concern about the length of time this is taking and what that means. I think that they are right, to ask for answers, like we have asked for answers, and ask for details on the process and what's going on. And the more people that keep asking the powers that be those questions, the better, I think. And I think that you're right. Obviously, I wrote that 777 have come up with they've signed off their latest funding package for Everton. So the money for to take Everton through April will be coming from 777. Just takes their total commitment to just over $200 million now. Obviously, that's a huge amount of money, and it's been another additional layer to the length of time it's taken for them to get approval. Yeah. Obviously, we're 6-7 months in, and that additional debt, it keeps going up and up and up that Everton are in. It's more money that they owe to more people as they try and survive until outcome is reached. But I also think it's important to raise it, not only is there concern with the length of time it's been taken, but also still with 777 themselves. That's a big point of what the FAB are doing. They submitted a load of questions to 777 back in October, just around what their plans are, what their vision for the club, their strategy, the sources of their finances, of their capital, and what it is that they intend to do with things like the stadium, and they haven't had an answer. I think asked similar questions at the time, and we've probably met with a similar answer about 777 believing that they're bound by prejudice and confidentiality and not wanting to do anything that might impact the scrutiny that they're going under from the Premier League. But to be perfectly honest, I think that's a lot of nonsense, really. I think that they have the capacity and the freedom and the freedom to come out and explain some of their thoughts and their plans, and to reassure supporters over what it is that they're hoping to do. I think that they have that, and I think there are numerous channels like ourselves that'd be willing to give them a platform if they were to come out and be a bit more transparent about what they do. It's been a journey of discovery, really, over the last 6 months, and it's still true to say that the vast majority of stories around that organisation are still negative. We are one of, I imagine, several, but we have constantly knocked on their door and said, what is your plan? And also, you keep pointing to the negative, and I think in one of their releases they said that there was a lot of perhaps misreporting around them, and made that allegation. We've gone to them and said, well, what is the misrepresentation? Where are the positive stories? And the fact that we haven't written any or very few is as much down to them as it is to anybody else. So, I someone that's kind of spent a lot of time in courts and knows about prejudice and things like that, I don't really see how them coming out and explaining what they plan to do with Everton would prejudice this process with the Premier League. Indeed, that largely seems to be what the Premier League are asking them themselves. Yeah. So it's a conversation that must have been going on for 6 months anyway. I think it's poor that 777 haven't been more transparent, given the amount of time that's passed, and the amount of concern that I think is justified around their potential ownership. But that being said, obviously, they are the ones that have signed the deal at the moment, and we will still give them a platform to say, that platform will always be open to them to try and explain themselves. So,
yeah.
Gav, we've had a comment coming in now on YouTube. Emma EFC says, why is it always left to the fan groups to fight for us? Silence from the club as per. What are your thoughts on the FAB correspondence this week? Obviously, to the three parties, Mr. Mashiri, Wanda and Masters.
Well, I can't really add to what Joe said. I mean, I think we are in limbo. And the worst thing about it is that there's two aspects of that concern me. Mm-hmm. A is how that affects us on the pitch. Mm-hmm. I know Dice really not said a lot about that, but that surely does. And B, the longer it goes on, the more parlous our financial position becomes, doesn't it? Because they're lending money to us at quite decent rates of interest, which makes our debts even worse. I know that can be converted to equity if they took over, but if they don't take over, then that's another enormous debt that needs paying off by whoever takes over the club. So the longer it goes on, and I don't, we've said on this forum, you know, we want to get the right decision. And that means taking time. I think we've now gone beyond that, where we're now in a position where we're talking about a funding package as if we're like some sort of country that's being hit by major floods that needs to, you know, bailing out by, you know, the United Nations or something. Yeah. We're sort of in that position now, aren't we, as a football club, which, considering the Premier League's riches and Mashiri's riches, there, I say, is a ludicrous position to be in, isn't it, really, if you think about it? We're like relying on someone to bail us out on a month-to-month basis. And and some of that, I think, at the moment, is down to the fact that this process has taken so long. Mm-hmm. And that it's those two factors. And I also agree what Joe said about the FAB. I think a lot of the stuff the FAB's come out with, not just in this around this matter, but also the commission. Mm-hmm. And I know the commission sort of watered down the impact. And I think it's great to think that they're being proactive after some initial cynicism. I think the communication has been really clear and well written, and not being, you know, sometimes some of this stuff can look amateurish, can't even undermine itself. I think being really well written and well argued pieces, and I think that reflects well on everybody. But then all that, I think it may have been helpful if the club has just said something.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there may be reasons for that, possibly, but some warming words, I think, from the club may be helpful. But as I say, there may be other reasons why they've not said anything. And we'll just have to wait and see. But the two concerns are how it's impacting us on the playing side, and B, you know, our finances were in a great state before 777 took over funding us, and that's become far worse. You know, about $200 million, it's like $180 million, something like that. It's a hell of a wedge. I mean, that's what, if you think about it, that's 1 year's money for us.
Mm.
£180 million is one year's income.
Yeah,
you know, and that's a hell of a lot of cash, isn't it?
Before you even get the green light.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the longer it goes on, it might not be the end of it, might it?
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Sources close to 777, they felt that, you know, an end game was coming. They remain confident, they say, that a deal will be done, but they just feel that by the end of April, it will come down one way or the other. Joe, obviously, this week, we've not had yourself and Gavin. Obviously, we've had the Nottingham Forest appeal now in terms of their PSR charge. And as we know, Everton have had their second hearing this week. So there's that remains the movable feast there. We don't know. I mean, on a basic level, Forest got a smaller points deduction than Everton for what was a bigger charge, but they've said that they're going to appeal that now. So again, that changes the goalposts again to a certain degree.
Probably like a lot of people, a little bit surprised that they've appealed. Because technically there's a risk that punishment could go up as a result of that. And I think probably from a lot of this, and granted we're seeing this probably more heavily swayed from an Everton perspective, but when you look at the judgment that Forest received and the penalty they received, it does feel that they got the best of the commissions. It felt like quite a lenient sanction in the end, bearing in mind some of the principles that seem to have been established in the first two Everton commissions. you know, you looked at that Forest one and you thought, I think they, you know, I think both Everton and Forest have legitimate grievances with the way in which some of their case has been handled.
Yeah.
But still, the big sticking point for me isn't necessarily other things like size of breach, which I think technically Forest got more points for because their breach was bigger. It was just once you went beyond the numbers and looked at aggravating and mitigating circumstances that Everton ended up with a higher total punishment. But there's still a lot that seems at odds with me with the way in which the case has been handled, and most particularly it's still that the Brennan Johnson thing, this idea that Forrest knew that they were going to be, he had been warned about breaching,
yeah,
signed players in January, warned again, you know, didn't take an early summer deal for Brennan Johnson, played it out to the end of the transfer window. Obviously they got more money financially, you'd say that makes more sense, but you know, it seems as if it was a very much a kind of a, it has the appearance of a deliberate decision not to comply with the PSR rules. Now, when you look at Everton, even in the case where Everton started with 10 points,
yeah,
it wasn't argued that their breach was deliberate or cynical.
No.
And in the Forest case, where they come down with 4, you know, it looks like, one, it was deliberate, like it was a proactive decision made, albeit it sounds like they did that bearing in mind conversations that they had with the Premier League, and it's just something I've written today that I think an interesting pattern across the Everton and the Forest cases that both seem to have had a very, very different interpretation over the conversations that they were having with the Premier League leading up to their breach in the Premier League themselves.
Yeah,
we'll probably never know what was in those discussions, but it's interesting that both of them have gone down that playbook. They seem to, you know, there seems to have been a disparity in how they were considering those discussions and how they would therefore be treated when these breaches came to a case. But, you know, it seems that you know, Forrest kind of almost had the opposite approach to Everton in terms of how they were breaching. But obviously, they then had a different approach to the case and they seem to have got more credit from that. And that's not necessarily unusual and perhaps not to be unexpected. But again, when you look at it, it feels like they've been dealt with quite leniently. Yeah. And one of the reasons for that, the heaviest mitigating factor, has been their kind of cooperation, exceptional cooperation with the Premier League.
Yeah.
To then come out from that and then issue a statement that rallies against the Premier League and then appeal against the Premier League's decision, yeah, kind of feels quite counterintuitive. And I think, so, I mean, I have two views on the appeal. On the one hand, I think it's a gamble because I think, bearing in mind that they've had, you know, their penalty has been reduced for their cooperation, a starting point for any appeal would be, well, you're not cooperating now, and yeah, therefore you're perhaps undermining that. You know, that seems... Yeah. But the second one is that whilst technically it seems that there's a potential for the deduction to be increased,
yeah,
it's been quite heavily reported in and around Forest that they've essentially been given a soft signal that there is no real danger of that happening.
Right.
Yeah. Which to me is pretty concerning. Like, look, they have every right to appeal. And you know, like I said, I don't think, for me, this isn't a case of saying Everton got this and therefore Forest got this. You know, what we're trying to do is move towards a process where there's a bit of clarity around it and fairness. And I think both could have legitimate arguments about the way they've been treated. But I think that one of the issues that we've got is that who's given them this soft signal? And you know, these are supposed to be processes that are, you know, bound by, how many times have we told that we're not going to be told anything because of confidentiality by both the Premier League, yeah, by both Everton, by Forest and all that? Who's doing this? And so who's doing that? And yeah, secondly, like, who can actually give them any assurances on that, yeah, base? Bearing in mind that we've had 3 expert panels, 9 different people approach 2 different cases, yeah, and all come at them from different angles. So who is there that can yeah, actively judge what the next panel are going to do when Forrest come along and say, oh dear, don't worry, they're not going to increase, whatever happens, they're not going to increase it.
Yeah.
Where's that signal coming from?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the one thing we learned from the Everton case, the Everton appeal, is the appeal panel looked at it completely differently to the original, yeah, commission. Mm-hmm. They were independent in that they were operating as if the first commission didn't exist. They were looking at it from through their own prism, weren't they? And there's a danger for Forest, notwithstanding what you're saying, Joe, about some of these leaks or whatever, can be, you know, quite slightly worrying, but look at it completely different and go down the line of some of the points that you've argued there. We argued, like, why are we talking about Flott Forest commission, that they make, they look at, like, the, you know, cynical breaching, you know, overspending in January when you knew you were going to beat PSR, and, you know, punish them accordingly. So if I was Forrest, I would have just taken the 4 points myself. But yeah, you don't know. But they'll argue they've got other you know, some of the stuff about what happens to you when you come up to the Premier League when you've not had the Palace your payments. I think and you are disadvantages that I do get to a degree. But yeah, I was surprised. But we'll have to wait and see. But we'll just see what happens.
I mean, just while we're on a bit of breaking news, obviously I think one of the listeners referred to anything at Everton not really saying anything about this process, yeah. And whilst we've been on, the interim CEO Colin Chong has issued a statement on the website, hasn't he?
Right, so, okay.
just in relation to 777. I'll read out the bit in relation to that. He goes, to that end, we are approaching the final stages of what has been a comprehensive but long regulatory process to progress a takeover agreed between our majority shareholder, Farhad Mashiri, and 777 Partners in the autumn of last year. The transaction requires approval from the Premier League, the Football Association and the Financial Conduct Authority in order to proceed. It is a process that has taken longer than any of us anticipated, although certainty over timescales is always a challenge given this is the first such full takeover of a Premier League club since the amendments were made to the regulatory approval process in March 2023. So that's the beefed up owners and directors test and also the introduction of the oversight panel, which will look over whatever the initial decision is made by the Premier League board. He then goes on to, out of respect for that process and aside from affirmations of a collective commitment to complete the transaction, Mr. Mashiri and 777 Partners have deliberately not provided detailed running commentary during the regulatory review period, and that must remain the case until the process is concluded. But we want to provide an assurance to every Evertonian that communication regarding plans for the future will be shared at the earliest opportunity following the conclusion to that process. So, I mean, he acknowledges that the process has taken a long time, is ongoing, but obviously the search for answers will continue until, I think many of us would argue that it's already to a degree too late if they've already got the green light, 777.
I'd like to think that Colin was watching the start of this broadcast and then heard that they need to send something out and has sent something else on the back of it. But no, I mean, there's not a lot more you can say than that, really.
I certainly think there's not a huge amount more that Everton can say.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because they're not really a primary mover in all this. This is a deal between Farhad Bashiri and 777 that is being overseen by the Premier League. Yeah. You know, Everton are almost like a dormant part of this, aren't they?
We're in the middle of that triangle, aren't we?
Exactly.
And
I think there's a lot more that 777 could say. I don't label the same accusation necessarily at the club. I mean, really, if they're maintaining what you would hope would be a suitable degree of distance between themselves, bearing in mind that green light hasn't been given, what you wouldn't expect and wouldn't want is for the club to be acting as a spokesperson for 777. So, they need to fight their own battles themselves, 777, don't they?
Do you think it might have been better if that sort of statement was sent earlier on in the process?
Well, firstly, I think it's probably important to say that's part of a much wider statement that acknowledges the uncertainty around the PSR, acknowledging that the case took place earlier on this week, and also kind of looking at Sean Dyche and what the need to back the team. I think probably going into this crucial run of fixtures. I think also saw a line in there about record breaking speed of season ticket renewals as well. So it's a much wider thing. I think it's probably the timing is probably makes sense with having had 3 weeks away from football. So
it's good to see the clubs at least acknowledging. You know, some of the correspondence that's been sent to them, and that's fair play. I just think around that might be a bit more helpful if they said something about the takeover area, that our hands are tied as a football club. We can't really do a lot. Fair play. Fair play to Colin.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
So we try and move on to some football now. long last, you were there, Joe. This is back at the sharp end of things. Finch Farm yesterday, Sean Dyche's pre-match press conference. And, of course, obviously a number of topics was discussed, and it was always going to be the case that he would be asked about a certain incident that went on the training trip to Portugal.
He was asked. I wasn't sure if the question was coming or not, but I think Vinnie O'Connor from Sky did the professional approach of the professional tactical approach of asking all the the obvious questions that he needed answers to first, and then find out one at the end. So if things went sour, then he still got what he needed from it, and fair play to him for that. I mean, Dykes tried to laugh it off, as we kind of expected he would. You know, I think we reported at the time that, you know, it was a misunderstanding, and it's something that I think all parties involved have tried to move on from and accepted that it's a misunderstanding. Gav, I mean, I'd be interested to see your thoughts on what he said.
A playful slap that was misinterpreted or something like that, wasn't it?
So, I mean, I kind of... There was almost like a lingering sense of bafflement over how things had escalated, given what unfolded, which I was found it strange that he alluded to.
I sort of... A couple of things going on here, isn't it? The first thing is, because there's a three-week gap, this sort of stuff is newsworthy, isn't it, for the start? The second thing I'd say, because there's a lot of stuff around Everton at the moment that's negative, if a team's winning games, we're doing really well. This is the type of thing that just doesn't get reported as such, but it just fits into the Everton narrative, doesn't it, really, all this stuff that we're talking about. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's the profile of it is probably been a lot higher than what Dice would think it should be and what I think it should be, really. I would imagine that thing probably has happened countless times over the years, disagreements with managers and players. Well, it has happened. I've written about it myself. Just part of football, isn't it, really? And I thought it was a bit of a nothing story, but I think it's rose to the surface because of the noises Sean Dyche would say around the club, and the fact that we are struggling and we are perceived to be a easy target.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, I think that's the reason why the actual incident itself, I wasn't there, so I can't really comment. Just wonder if Nathan Patterson plays tomorrow, though. That could be quite an interesting thing, you know. But I just thought it was a story, but a lot's been made out of it that I think it didn't really deserve, to be honest with you. What do you think, Chris?
I think my concern would be how we got out. The fact that it could have been some diners there in the restaurant, maybe a third party sort of it. But I'd be more concerned that unity in the camp, why these sort of things necessarily are slipping out. But I suppose these days, I mean, so much, isn't it? I mean, we were, the club were officially, you know, not revealing where they were, but then the players were on social media all the time, posting all kinds anyway. And that's the world that we live in now.
There is a historical precedence, I think, with Everton, which is similar, which is in 1990 when Colin Harvey's last season, we not won from the start of the season. We had the infamous Martin Kill, Kevin Sheedy incident in the Chinese. It was in the hotel bar, wasn't it, in Southport, and that got out in similar circumstances to this. And it was all over the newspapers. And one of the things, the context to that is Everton have not won a game all season. Colin Harvey's under pressure. This feeds that narrative, and I think this is a similar type of incident for me. In normal circumstances, it would probably be just brushed under the car, but if we were mid-table, but it just fits into the whole narrative.
Especially a player now, who he's not been picking, either.
Absolutely. The whole narrative around Everton now, in the same way as the incident with Kevin Sheedy and Martin Keown in Southport 1990 fitted into the narrative then, that was a manager that was struggling and was a club that was struggling, and these are the type of stories that get out and then get legs on the back of that.
I'm not too worried about the leak, Chris, just in the sense that my understanding is the incident happened at what's essentially a public restaurant. And I think that these kind of luxury five star, largely sports, but largely golf related places, particularly Southern Europe and this time of year, they probably have quite a select clientele, don't they? And I think that it's probably the type of place where Everton turned up, and you would expect to come across quite a lot of people in the world of football, and that would include. I know that there were significant figures in the world of football that were staying there the week before, for instance. So I don't think it would be that surprising that if there were agents or directors, all those intermediaries that you get that kind of float around football, make a lot of money and like to spend their time, going on golf and holidays when they get a spare time, ex-players, those type of things.
Rather than the Everton group itself.
Big be aware of who that group of Everton players were in a way that, say, the general public might not always have been.
Yeah.
And two, have probably more natural links to newspapers and people like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so I'm willing to give the squad the benefit of the doubt there, I think, because I certainly don't think that it's anything that the parties actually involved wanted to come out. And I don't think anybody proactively from the actual incident itself sort of put it out there. My worry is a little bit I'm not worried about the incident itself. I think, you know, Dyche is forever talking in press conferences about reporters not getting his jokes when he cracks one during an answer. I think it's quite easy to see how misunderstandings can happen.
Yeah.
I'm probably just a little bit worried about the resilience of the group if things start badly. I mean, we're going to come on to the football now.
Yeah.
I actually think Everton might get a good result at Bournemouth. But Bournemouth is a tricky game. I mean, it's an absolute hellhole of a place for Everton over the years, isn't it? When you look at the past, it really is. There is a scenario that things get worse before they get better. And after this 3-week break, they go to Bournemouth, difficult side, potentially not win. They go away to Newcastle, a very difficult game, not win. Middle, back end of next week, maybe get a verdict, quite possibly points deductions. They end up moving closer to that chasing pack beneath them. Well, the pack beneath them. It's up to that pack when they're chasing. But some of those teams, Forest, particularly Burnley, might close a gap on Everton if they were to not get anything from the next two games. Mm. And you end up in a... My fear is you just end up in a situation where this time in a week, we're looking ahead to that Burnley game, and all of a sudden, Everton are either in the relegation zone or on the cusp of the relegation zone. The 11 without a win has become 13, and the pressure on that Burnley game becomes huge. Because if Burnley were to win one of their two games and Everton were to get hit with, say, a 3-point deduction, then all of a sudden Burnley could go into that game at Ship to Goodison thinking Everton are within their sights, and it could just completely change the dynamic at the bottom end of the table and of that match. And my worry is, if Everton were to hit a negative trajectory this week, and, you know, accounts coming out as well, that we end up in a scenario where just if there is an underlying tension and things could flare again, that's my only kind of worry. I think it would take a lot of bad things to happen for Everton to end up in a situation where that was to happen. But like, you just worry just a little bit.
The counter to that is Dyche won his last six Premier League games against Bournemouth.
Yeah.
And
Bournemouth and Newcastle at home were 2-3-0 wins.
Yeah.
Take us back, please.
So he's won eight. They are his favourite Premier League team to face. He's won 8 out of 12 against them. And Bournemouth themselves, although they've picked up points, haven't they? They've conceded about 5 goals at home to Sheffield United and Luton in the last two home games. To be fair, they've dragged 4 points out of that. Those two games. So the counter is, if we get a win tomorrow and the results, you know, go in our favour, all of a sudden you're thinking,
there are two ways in which it
could be safe this time next week. Both
could,
play like, Burnley.
That's it. Could go and play Burnley at home, get 3 points, and all of a sudden say, you know what, I think
we're safe.
Season's over.
We've swung down over the last minute or so. Like that's the way it can be.
That's right.
Well, the hearing might not be as bad as some of us might fear.
Yeah.
There is that potential. Like, we. Everton could be...
Constantina one way or the other.
In eight days' time, Everton could be in the relegation zone. 8 days' time, Everton could be essentially safe for the season. So, what's probably going to happen is it's going to be a really bitty week where they kind of pick up some points, but not as many as they want. And we just end up kind of the wiser. Yeah. But there is I think the week that will probably define the season is that one where they have 3 home games in a week now, the Forest, Liverpool, Brentford. But... This is quite possibly the most important. You know, we've got to get there first. It's been a week. It's been a season of so many important weeks, and this week is probably up there with a fight for being the most. But when you take into account the accounts and the probable PSR kind of thing coming out as well.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
bearing all that in mind. So, Gav, if I come with you first, then. Paul, we've got a comment here on YouTube. Yeah. Paul Galt says, would you say tomorrow's game is a must win or a must not lose game? We've discussed that quite a few times this season.
I'm not sure that I should say.
They're all must win games.
They're all important games. That wasn't attempting an impression of him, sorry.
Was it not?
I think it might sound like a very bad one.
On this basis, that one of the great things of football now is that one of the is this thing of looking at blocks of games, isn't
blocks.
It? Blocks of games. That's overtaken, you know, we take every game as it comes. It's sort of like a cop-out, isn't it, for this type of question. So look at these block of three games, isn't it, really? I would say... must not lose, but on the basis that we've got to take a win now against Burnley, I think. Yeah. And if you said a point against Bournemouth, three against Burnley, and
I think four points,
I'd take that.
I don't think Newcastle is an impossible.
No, absolutely.
But I think they're
mid-table mediocrity, you know, aren't they? A little bit, aren't they?
Yeah, I think if Everton were to get 4 points this week, I think that would be a positive.
Oh, yeah, from the two away games, yeah. Oh, well, the three, okay.
And Burnley, yeah. Yeah. Burnley at home is a must-win, That is a must-win. We can argue about the other two, but I don't see a scenario in which Burnley at home is a must-win.
If you get a draw tomorrow, I'd be quite happy with that. But it then puts the pressure on the Burnley game. I mean, and you just... And then we're looking at results elsewhere. Army again.
I think this is a... all sorts of if buts and maybes, but I think if Everton come away with the same or more points from these next three games then they get deducted from the second case, if they were to get deducted, then I think they're fine for the season.
Yeah chance of our first double, isn't it, in the post-COVID era.
Twice,
isn't it? Yeah,
Bournemouth. Then Newcastle. Yeah, yeah. Well, and then Burnley. We've got three chances of doing that.
Yeah. Three in a week.
Sorry, Joe. You're getting critiqued here by the Everton fan advisory board. Sounded more like Roy Kent than Sean Dyche. Wow.
After all the nice things I said at the start, I know.
Joe has clarified. Apparently,
wasn't it? There was a frog in my throat. Somebody that has to stare into Sean Dyche's eyes from close proximity at least twice every week. And well, I mean, it's going to be. We did it yesterday. Be doing it after Bournemouth.
Yeah.
Be doing it after Newcastle.
Even a few weeks apart, though, haven't you? Even a few weeks apart, making up for last time.
At five, I don't think I dare try and impersonate him.
Well, moving on. Just a slight deviation, Joe. I mean, you mentioned, obviously, he probably wouldn't have been in the starting lineup, but, I mean, he's obviously a blow young Lewis Dobbin there. Obviously, maybe not as bad as they feared, but has picked up an injury.
Yeah, it sounds, I mean... Yeah, asked Dyche about this in the embargo section of the press. I mean, for those who don't know how it works, we have the first section of the press conference where everyone can watch. That's when the broadcast people ask questions. And obviously, he gave an initial answer in relation to injuries there. In the closed section, which is when myself and the print journalists get to ask questions.
Yeah.
I just asked him about Lewis Dobbin because wasn't sure if something had happened with him. So I just wanted to get clarity, and it turned out something else. After Portugal, but before the international break, just before the players had the players who were on international duty had a break. It looks like training at Finch Farm, he landed awkwardly and damaged his ankle ligaments. I don't know how serious. Dyche didn't go into that much detail to me. He said that initially they feared he might need surgery, and he doesn't. So that's obviously a good sign. But it's clear that he's going to miss games. So now look, Lewis Dobbin hasn't. I mean, he's having a breakthrough season because he's involved in the first team squad. I mean, he scored that goal. He had that wonderful moment against Chelsea.
Yeah.
Obviously, you don't think he'd be starting games. No. So, he's a bit part player, but he's still an important player to have in and around the squad. And he's still been a positive impact on that dressing room and on that, on that squad during the course of the season. So it's with such a small squad, it's a worry. And I think what it does is, because again, the other thing that we learned from Finch Farm on Thursday is that Arnold Danjuma, that was his first, yesterday he took part in some proper drills for the first time with the squad, Dyche said. There's some pictures of him from, I think, Tuesday engaging with the first team squad at Finch Farm. That sounds like he made another step forward on Thursday morning. But it still seems that he's probably a little bit away off. Obviously, we go through that whole thing of the spit and then this Deitch fit.
Yeah.
So it's probably, we're probably not looking at this week for Dan Juma, or certainly not this game and Newcastle. I think what it does is it just, and this I think is something that was very, very clear to us coming into the 3 week break, is how reliant we are on Dwight McNeil and Jack Harrison. And I think by the end of that run of fixtures, I think they looked absolutely exhausted, which I think is understandable. They're two players that started this season with some of the worst injuries that they'd ever had in their careers.
Yeah.
And to come over that and then embarked on a campaign where they just didn't really have much backup. They had Dan Juma, which, like we spoke on before, I think we're all a bit concerned as to why Deitch didn't use him more from the bench in the first half of the season. And obviously, you know, his availability, his greater use of him could have protected them a little bit. These are two players that have asked to do a lot of work by Sean Deitch and do it for the full 90 plus whatever stoppage time.
Yeah.
So we've got to hope that the 3 weeks has given them a little bit of an injection of... a bit of an opportunity to recharge their batteries, because Everton are going to be so reliant on them over the coming weeks. So they would have been anyway, but even more so because, as I say, Dobbin isn't going to be an option, and Dan Juma
throw James Garner into that.
Well, it's a chance to reset, Gav. I mean, got a comment here from Simon C on the YouTube. He said, "Tomorrow's game's winnable if we are set up to win. Unfortunately, we are set up not to concede and to nick a goal from set pieces, which falls apart when we concede the goal. Do you imagine?" It's a chance to reset. Do you imagine there's going to be... Sean Deitch doesn't tend to make too many surprise changes, but, I mean, where would you possibly see any changes? I mean, right-back has got to be a discussion, hasn't it? Seamus Coleman played both full games for Republic of Ireland this past week. Maybe a decision over centre-forward as well, whether he retains better or goes back to Calvert-Lewin, but I can't imagine there'd be too many areas of the pitch who's going to make any radical switches.
We've got no options, have we, really? I mean, let's face it, even the people off the bench were losing those options. No Dan Juma now, no Dobbin.
Yeah.
So I think there's very few things he can do other than change the centre forward and change the right back. To be fair, you could argue there's a little bit he could do.
Would you change the right back? No, I don't know.
I think if Coleman's fit, I'd always play Coleman at this stage of the season. I think he's vital. There's two ways of looking at it. That Republic thing, wasn't it? Really, played 290 minutes.
Has he got a third in him?
Has he got a third in him? Yeah. Or the other bad thing is looking at it is he's got a lot. You know, he's got some fitness. Before playing for us, so if he can get on the pitch, I would play him. I think we need him as captain and leader, as you would say. So that would be my selection. I'd probably, Cavalin's got a decent record against Bournemouth. I'd probably look at maybe changing the striker. I think the key thing in all of this, and it goes back to the original question about setting up to win and all that, is we've got to be creative. To be creative, you've got to have McNeil and Harrison firing on all cylinders like they were before Christmas. And I think that's the key thing for me. And so what we're saying is here is, hopefully the break has done them well. I mean, I think Garner's probably played more minutes than anybody, bar Tarkowski, I would imagine. He looked another one who looked in need of a break. If we get them all back, all fresh, all fit, then I think we will hopefully see a little bit more of a positive approach than what we saw before the three-week absence. And then just take it from there. I mean, let's face it, it's winnable. Yeah. If you were playing Bournemouth with three, was it 3-0 at Luton half time, was it, or thereabouts? You know, they obviously can see a goal, so it's a winnable game. It's not like going to Old Trafford even the other week. It's a different game, and it's something we can get something from, notwithstanding our absolutely dreadful record there. But I think we can definitely win, and I think hopefully Deitch can take advantage of the 3 week break to put out a more positive approach rather than just basically what it was before the break, where it was just try and stay in the game and hope for the best.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Joe, Eugene McGeever says, "I think Everton need to play Nathan Patterson against Bournemouth away tomorrow afternoon." I mean, it's an option. He could throw a curveball. I mean, what do you think might happen in terms of changes? Do you see that right back one as one up for grabs?
There's three areas, isn't there? I think right back, centre midfield, and up front. Right back, I think he has to make a change. Ben Godfrey did a good job when he came in right back against Fulham. The Everton side that was really stretched. Obviously, you know, since then he's had more running in the team and obviously played the last three games, you know, probably more than that, right back actually.
He's played the last six, and
for the last three games, unfortunately,
yeah,
you know, goals have been conceded, you know, from that area. Now look, it's not all Ben Godfrey's fault,
no,
because obviously a lot of those goals, there are plenty of opportunities to prevent them for, before they even get to a situation where Godfrey's the last line. But I think that it's an area where there's potential to improve on, given what's happened in the last few games. I think just by virtue of having a specialist right back for a start would be a help. So, you know, Coleman, if he's got the fitness, is a no brainer for me. I like Patterson. I think Patterson's raw, but I think he's also had spells during his time at Everton where he's had a run in the team, so he can do a job at right back. Most notably the start of last season where he played really well in quite a few games and all the way up to the derby where they kept a clean sheet and he was very good in.
Yeah.
But then he got injured and, you know, that's been a recurring theme of when he has had chances and taken them, injuries got in the way. I was disappointed not to see Patterson come on in the second half against Manchester United, you know, when Everton were 2-0 down. It felt like a more attacking option at right back was just an easy thing just to try when you've got nothing to lose. And obviously, it's quite telling that he didn't do that. I don't think he'll start Patterson tomorrow. And I almost also kind of think the way in which things unfolded, you know, on Portugal, that there's a stubbornness to Dyche, who might mean that even if he was minded to play him, he might actually go, I don't want to start him, because then people will all say it's a reaction to that,
absolutely.
And it becomes a story. Yeah. And I'd have a degree of sympathy for that approach. But it's Coleman for me, first choice. Bobby Patterson second.
You're saying is there, like, shorthand for saying there's a little bit of admission of guilt from Dyche. If you play passing, people could perceive that, like, we'd actually just be selecting them, wouldn't he? I suppose the optics are out.
Dominic Calvert-Lewin.
No, I would, yeah.
I think Dominic Calvert-Lewin is a very good Premier League striker. I hope that he finds the form that was missing, that's missed for 2024 so far. I have every faith that he will do.
Yeah.
I think tomorrow's a good opponent for him to try and hit the back of the net. And then the other option is the midfield, because obviously they play with the three and there's four available for the first time in a while. So obviously I think Decore starts in that kind of chaos role between midfield and attack, doesn't he? And then it's a case of any two from Anana, Idrissa Gueye and James Garner. And you look at what Dyche has done previously, you'd suggest perhaps that Onana might be the most likely to drop
well for Belgium in the week.
But as we've covered a lot on this podcast, I'm a big admirer of Onana.
Yeah. I just said he did well for Belgium in the week.
A nod of approval from Chris. I probably start. Maybe start Garner and Onana in behind Decore. So,
yeah.
But that, I mean, that's a bit more open to it. But I think this is very much the perfect. I think this is maybe not the perfect, but it's certainly a very good game for everyone to come back to away from home against a beatable side. The Dyche has a good record against. Yeah. Maybe further away than we'd have liked, but
on a bank holiday weekend.
I think it's far more favourable to say, for instance, if Everton had been at Newcastle first and then gone to Bournemouth, and albeit, as I say, very good chance, you've got a chance of getting something at Newcastle, but you go there and Everton could play to their best of their ability and still lose against Newcastle because of the talent they've got in that side and, you know, the way the house got them when they're on song, which they haven't been recently, but. Yeah, to have the easier fixture first, I think is helpful. So. Yeah.
Well, saying that, it's come to predictions time. Now, I've already given a prediction this week because the Bournemouth media people got in touch with me. Yeah. Obviously, Joe wasn't available, so they turned to me and. I stuck my neck out and I said, you know, Everton are due a win. They're certainly due a win at Bournemouth. And I've gone for a repeat of that game on 28th of May. Hopefully it's not quite as tense as that one, but 1-0 Everton. Gav?
I'll go with 1-0 Everton.
Yeah.
I'm positive, Hassan. I just think the three-week break will reinvigorate us and they'll come back fresher. I think Decore is another player who probably, I'd like to think he's been working really hard in the 3-week break to get some fitness up, because he just doesn't look fit, has he? And I think 1-0 will be eminently achievable results, so we don't go to our record 12 games without winning in the Premier League. That sets us up well then, doesn't it? You're looking at a completely different block of three games if we get a win tomorrow, aren't you? And I think we can easily do that. And they've got not much to play with. They've got 7 points in the last three games, which is sort of means they'll stay up, I think. And 1-0 to Everton. There you go.
Yeah, Joe.
2-0 to Everton.
Wow, he's up in the stakes.
I think Dyche will do a job. On them. I think, like Gav suggested, I think it'll just reset the tone for what's quite a significant week.
Let's hope so.
I don't think it's panic stations if they lose, but they could really. It's another game, and there are opportunities throughout the final round of fixtures where Everton take control of things, take matters into their own control.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And I think that this is a really big opportunity.
Going back to the order of the fixtures, the one game you wouldn't want to Burnley at home tomorrow would have been the worst of the three. So
I've got another week to wait for that one.
Fixtures have panned out for us has been worked in our favour, hopefully.
Yeah, well, enjoy the rest of the Easter weekend, everyone, whether you're travelling down to Bournemouth or not. We'll be back with you on Easter Monday to reflect on Bournemouth and to look forward to the trip at Newcastle United off the opposite ends of the country. Don't forget to like and subscribe for us. And I've been your host, Chris Beasley. I've been joined by Joe Thomas and Gavin Buckland. This has been the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.